Welcome back to KSCJ Radio, 1360 AM, 94.9 FM in Sioux City, Iowa. I'm Brian Vakulskis, and this is Having Read That, conversations with authors about their books.
The setup for Jasmine Guillory's new novel, Party of Two, is simple, boy meets girl. But it gets complicated in a hurry. Olivia Monroe moved to Los Angeles to start her own law firm. She meets a man in a hotel bar, and they hit it off. But she soon discovers he is Max Powell, the junior senator from the state, who spends the work week in Washington. So is this just a weekends-only long-distance relationship, or could it be more? And New York Times bestselling author Jasmine Guillory joins me now from her home in Oakland. Jasmine, Olivia is black, Max is white. How has race played out in their individual lives before they met each other?
You know, it's played out in many different ways. I mean, everything about your life is shaped by your race. And so Olivia has fought for everything she's had. She's a black lawyer. She was a partner at her law firm in New York. Now she's starting her own. And life has been more difficult for her in many ways. But also, you know, she's had the rewarding and delightful experience of living life as a black woman. Whereas Max has had a lot of privilege in his life, which he recognizes. And so he is now a senator. He, you know, makes his way through life kind of in a charmed way. And now he and Olivia are coming together and they're realizing both their differences, but also the things that they have in common and the ways that their backgrounds have shaped their lives and how they find their way to one another.
Can somebody truly understand how race has played a role in their lives before they are engaged in an interracial relationship without seeing it through the lens of the other person?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, we all have friendships, right? Like, I think, you know, there are many ways that you see the way race plays a role in someone else's life when you interact with them on a daily basis. If you stop and think and ask questions and really listen to them. I think it's different in a relation, you know, in a romantic relationship than in a friendship. But, you know, there are many ways that you can think of those things and figure them out and pay attention to what's happening in the world and individually with, you know, people that you know to really figure that out.
We see that, I mean, the old saying is that love is blind, and I always joke that lust is even more blind, but what blind spots does Max have when it comes to his relationship with Olivia?
Max doesn't quite understand how difficult it is to be dating a senator. I think, you know, he kind of thinks of the world as happy and nice to him and kind because that's how the world has been to him. Granted, he's had a lot of, you know, he's fought for a lot of things in his life. He was also a lawyer. He was a prosecutor. He went through a lot of change when he was a prosecutor. And so he doesn't, it's not that he, you know, has rose-colored glasses on, but he doesn't really understand all of the other things that Olivia is thinking about when she thinks about whether she really wants to be in a relationship with someone so high-profile.
We see these high-profile relationships happen quite often, and right, wrong, or indifferent, they do generate publicity, just not by simple fact that it's a that it's an interracial relationship, but that it's a relationship with a United States senator. So when you have that added pressure on there, why would Olivia even want to put herself in that position, not just with any man, but in particular with somebody so powerful?
You know, it's the power of love. She is very reluctant about it. She thinks about it a lot, but she grows to really care about Max in the book and kind of throws caution to the wind, which is very unlike her. But she falls in love with Max and decides to go for it.
Food becomes almost a third character in the book, and really all your books, but in particularly in this one. Why do you elevate food to such status in your writing?
You know, I think food is a very important thing in many of our lives, right? I think, you know, many people are thinking right now what they're going to have for breakfast or maybe eating breakfast right now. I think about, you know, when I'm going out to dinner with someone, where we're going and what we're having is as much of a part of our plan as it is that we're seeing one another. And so I think a lot of people come together and find a lot of common ground through the foods that they eat and how they like to eat and how they like to share things. So I always think that that's fun to think about, you know, What are foods that people have in common? What are things that they dislike? What are things that they can teach each other to like or to appreciate? So I think that that's always fun for me to think about when I'm thinking about characters.
Well, and then even in writing, and I used to watch the show 24 on Fox Television with Kiefer Sutherland, they never stopped to take bathroom breaks or to have a snack or anything like that. And so I guess...
I know, exactly. That drove me crazy.
Well, you don't think about it in books, but nobody eats in books.
Right. I mean, I always want to think, you know, if they're doing a bunch of things in the day, when did they stop for lunch? Like, didn't they get hungry? Don't they need some sustenance to get them through the rest of that day? Those are things that I always think about, and so I'm sure other people do too, so I make sure to put those in my book.
How much of a catalyst is food for a relationship? And by that I mean, it provides such a great excuse for two people to get together and socialize. Let's go to dinner. Let's come over and we'll make dinner, that type of thing. How big of a catalyst is food for a relationship?
I think it obviously depends on the relationship and the person, but I think it can be a really big one. You know, a lot of times, I love to cook, and a lot of times cooking for other people is, you know, the way that I show love to them. And I think that's often true with other people who like to cook or who like to share food. And so I think that can be a big area of common ground in a relationship and a big way that people kind of come together and show love for one another.
I'm chatting with Jasmine Gilroy about her brand new novel, Party of Two. The book is available now wherever your fine books are sold. She's a best-selling New York Times author. I think this is number five for you, right?
This is the fifth book, yeah.
This has been one hell of a ride for you over the last couple of years. I mean, you're practicing corporate attorney and now best-selling, New York Times bestseller. How does this type of thing, I mean, has it even caught up with you yet that this is now your life?
Not really. You know, there's been also a lot of other big things going on in the world in the past few years, but it has been a real roller coaster ride. I think my family doesn't quite understand it yet either.
Well, you seem to have found a very underserved niche in reading and with these romance novels and especially with interracial relationships. How did you discover this niche that was so underserved by writers?
You know, I don't think it was really underserved so much as underpublicized. Like, I think there are a lot of really great writers who write romance about black women, about women of color, but the publishing industry and, you know, bookstores and libraries haven't really served that population well. Those books haven't been as well promoted. People haven't known where to find them. And so I'm thrilled that now books like mine are getting that promotion. People are being able to find them in bookstores and libraries and, you know, Target and airports. And so that really thrills me, and I just hope many more people are writing books like that now.
I did not know until I started doing a little bit of research about the racism that existed within the publishing industry. And you had it out with the RWA, the Romance Writers of America, over this. And I know they're trying to make some changes, but can you kind of bring me up to speed on where that occurred? Because I think that's an underreported thing as well.
Yeah, you know, that was there have been a lot of issues with RWA in the past few years, and it all came to a head last December, right after Christmas, right before Christmas. I can't remember where it was in the Christmas world, but they accused, another writer had called out writers for racism, and they took away her membership for doing so, and so it became a big, everything really came to the surface of so many other things that writers had been angry about and their treatment of RWA, and so I think a lot of people are ready for changes, and they have committed to making changes, so I guess we'll see what happens, but I think, you know, they are not the only ones. Like, big publishers have really not done as well by black authors, especially for the entire history of the publishing world. And so that's a big thing that I really hope changes soon.
And I even noticed that this year. I read Kylie Reed's book, and that became a New York Times.
Oh, I love that book.
That became a New York Times bestseller. I had her on the show. And so I think maybe a trend is starting, but as far as it goes, if you do think about it, it's a very monocolored New York Times bestseller list every week, and that has to be something that you just noticed just as a non-published writer getting into this field, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you start to wonder, you know, is there anyone out there who will want my books? Will publishers even publish my books? I mean, those are real concerns that I think the Black authors have that a lot of authors, you know, don't worry about in that way, because we think, you know, am I barred from the publishing industry just because of the color of my skin? So I really hope that publishing takes a really hard look at what they have been doing and how they have been treating Black authors and make a real push. Because those readers are out there, you know. There are lots of readers who love books by Black women, by Black men, you know, from all ages, like from kids to adults. There are tons of readers for those books, and so I hope publishers take note of that and really recognize and pull out all of those books that they've been saying, oh, I'm not sure if we can do that with, and realize that readers will grab them.
Is it a chicken and the egg thing going on? Because, you know, Reese Witherspoon and Oprah both have the book clubs that promote a lot of books that become bestsellers. And so is it enough to have people with that status try to promote these books, and then in turn it affects the publishing industry, or does it have to come from the top down with the publishing industry?
You know, it's really helpful to have people like Reese and Oprah to be promoting those books, but I think they can't be the only ones. You know, the publishing industry is a lot more powerful. They publish a lot more books than, you know, a few celebrities can promote in a year. And so I want to see those books. I want to see the picture books and the, you know, the young adult books and romances and literary fiction for everyone, not just a handful that are picked by a celebrity and go on to be bestsellers.
I said at the top of this that you live in Oakland. You're from the Bay Area. What's the writing community like in the Oakland area?
Oh, it's fantastic. I mean, you know, I haven't been able to see people in person as much, obviously, over the past few months, but there's so many great writers here. There's so many wonderful bookstores here. It has such a, you know, long-standing, deep history in the community, and so it's really great to be able to, you know, talk to other people and learn from their experiences and get advice from writers, from readers, from librarians, booksellers. It's a really great community.
And it's a very intellectual community as well. I mean, I'm thinking about the Grotto in San Francisco and so many of the writers that have come through there as well.
Absolutely, yeah. And, you know, so many universities around as well. And so a lot of people are either connected with them or came for the universities and stayed. And so it's a really, it's just a really wonderful area.
I'm curious, when you write as many books as you do, you're writing at a hell of a pace here. How far in advance, I mean, when did you get done with Party of Two? And I'm sure you're on to book two since then.
Party of Two, that one, the process was a little faster. Not the writing process, but the process from when I finished to when it came out. So I really finished it this spring.
Oh, okay.
So that one came out pretty close after I finished it. But, you know, I'm starting to write something now. We'll see what happens with it. It's kind of a hard time to be writing right now. So we'll see how it goes.
Can you set a book in current times like you'd like to with coronavirus, not knowing how all this is going to end? Or do you have to kind of back it up a couple of years?
I don't know. I think a lot of authors are really struggling with that right now. I've had a lot of conversations with people about it. I think people are trying to do kind of a combination of things. You know, I know people who are, you know, setting books in 2019 instead of 2020 now. People who are jumping forward in time. People who have decided to write historical fiction now. You know, I think, and, you know, sometimes we're just kind of making stuff up and hoping the future is what we imagine it to be. So I think there's a whole combination of authors who are trying different things and seeing what could work.
All right. The book is Party of Two. She's Jasmine Guillory, the New York Times bestselling author. Jasmine, thanks for a great book, and thanks for joining us to talk about it.
Thank you so much. It was wonderful to talk to you.
This has been Having Read That on KSCJ Radio in Sioux City, Iowa. I'm Brian Vakalskis. Check out all of our episodes on our website, kscj.com. Also, be sure to like Having Read That on Facebook and subscribe to our iTunes podcast. Thanks to segment producer John Weisler. We will be back next time. It's a quarter after one. I'm all alone.